A thing that looks like a police box standing in a junkyard. It can move anywhere.
Haven, concentrate on Sim. Give priority to the detectors and the navigation systems.
There is a corridor. And the corridor is time. It surrounds all things.
On display, I eventually had to go down to the cellar. That's the display department. With a torch. The lights are probably gone. So had the stairs.
You are just number 6.
I am not a number. I am a person.
Welcome to British Invaders 186. This is the podcast all about British science fiction television, and today we are talking about the Secret Service. This is Brian from Canada.
And this is Eamon from England. Hello.
At least once each year, we like to look at a Gerry Anderson show because there's so many fun ones. And in particular, we like to look at some of his Super Mario Nation shows, because there were a lot of those as well. The Secret Service was the last of Gerry Anderson's 1960s Super Mario Nation shows. He wouldn't come back to puppetry for years. And it was a 13-episode, 25-minute series that was a spy show in this sort of puppet show style with a science fiction concept or two being definitely part of it.
That's right. And, you know, in a way, it's slightly unusual because it mixes Gerry Anderson's familiar marionettes with a bit more live action than is usual for these shows. And as you say, Brian, the last of the great 60s Super Mario Nation shows, perhaps the one that signalled the changeover to live action shows, programmes like UFO and Space 1999, which we've discussed before. And as you say, Gerry Anderson wouldn't return to puppets after this until I think sometime in the 80s with Terrorhawks. So quite a gap. And The Secret Service, a slightly odd show because for some reasons which we'll get to in our production notes, it was only shown in 3 of the ITV regions. And so isn't terribly well remembered, just because I think not an awful lot of people saw it at the time. But it has had a DVD release, and so that's how we can get to talk about it, having watched it here now.
Yes, it is definitely an unusual show, a bit of an oddity. So for that reason, an interesting one for us to talk about. So the setup, Father Stanley Unwin is a parish priest, and his gardener is a man called Matthew, and both of them really work for the British Secret Service. In particular, for an organization called BISHOP, that stands for British Intelligence Service Headquarters Operation Priest. Yet another Gerry Anderson complicated acronym for an organization.
Yeah, I'm sure they came up with the name BISHOP and then tried to work out what it would stand for.
Oh, of course.
So, as you say, we've got Father Unwin and Matthew, and Father Unwin has a rather marvellous device which will help him and Matthew in their work as Secret Service agents. He inherited this device from a friendly scientist called Professor Humbert, who left it to him. And it's basically, it's a miniaturization ray. It's a ray that has the ability to shrink people or objects to about 1/3 of their normal size. And so he shrinks down Matthew, and Matthew then transfers into a specially adapted suitcase, and they're away on their missions from there, the man in a suitcase.
Yes, absolutely. And Matthew does go back to his normal size regularly, but usually at the beginning of each episode, Matthew is shrunk down to this 1/3 size. And very often hidden in the case, which is this little suitcase. And Father Unwin, of course, being a priest and dressed as a priest, is sort of innocuous, so he's able to be a spy as well as this miniaturized person being the other spy. So usually the team of miniaturized Matthew and Father Unwin are this sort of very successful secret agent slash detective pair in figuring out what's going on and stopping the enemy agents and so on. And we also have this idea of Father Unwin speaking in this odd sort of gibberish with words mixed in that apparently allows him to persuade and convince people to follow him and do things for him. It's something that it seems is almost hypnotic, that he can almost control people or convince people with this strange way of speaking.
It is a bit bizarre. He has, as you say, he's the appearance of a kindly parish priest. He's talking nonsense, and in several situations, guards and so on, with various sort of like British politeness, will just assume that they understood what he was saying and let him pass. So as you say, it's how he bluffs his way into several situations.
It's not clear if it's a bluff or if it's actually some kind of special technique or special almost power that he has in order to do this, that, you know, it may be more than it appears.
Okay, let's run through these characters that we're talking about. So we've mentioned, obviously, Father Stanley Unwin, who is played or voiced by the comedian Stanley Unwin. And his thing, his entire success as a comedian, as far as I can tell, was built on this thing of him speaking a strange gobbledygook language of his own devising, which sounded like he was talking something like English, but not quite. And we actually see Stanley Unwin in the title credits as himself, as he pulls back a curtain at the window of the vicarage. And then we see the puppet of him, which is very, very sort of like closely modelled on him. It's very sort of an accurate representation of the actor himself, very much personifying the whole role, I think, Brian.
Yes, absolutely.
Then, as you've said, we've got his assistant, Matthew, a Secret Service agent who masquerades as the gardener at the vicarage, voiced by the actor Gary Files, who was, unlike Stanley Unwin, I think was a Gerry Anderson regular, had appeared in other Super Marination shows. Rather unusually, he does two voices. So when Matthew is pretending to be the gardener, he speaks in a sort of country accent and sort of dumbs himself down a bit. And then when it's just him and Father Unwin, he reverts to his normal, more intelligent and more sort of like received pronunciation voice.
Yes, that was a slightly bizarre thing to use, the change of accents with that character. Mrs. Appleby is their seemingly always confused housekeeper, voiced by Sylvia Anderson, the then wife of Gerry Anderson, who was very much part of this show. She was voicing that character. The bishop, who is Stanley Unwin and Matthew's boss, is the head of the operation and voiced by Jeremy Wilkin, who had done previous work with Gerry Anderson doing the voice of Captain Ochre on Captain Scarlet and other characters as well. And we also remember him particularly from Undermined, where he starred, and from a memorable appearance on Blake 7 as well.
Okay, that's our main cast. There are a couple of recurring characters that appear a few times during the show, some other agents. One in particular we'll mention is Agent Blake, and I'll mention him because there's a certain amount of recycling going on in this show, I think, Brian, because you may recognise Agent Blake as looking very much like Captain Scarlet. I believe it's the same puppet, but just with a different wig and a pair of glasses.
And a different voice, of course.
Yes, he has a different voice because he's voiced by Keith Alexander, and clearly doesn't have the confidence and abilities that Captain Scarlet had in that show. But there you go. So Agent Blake crops up a few times. Do so,
but what you say may be put into writing and used in evidence.
Ah, yes. Write your scribbly in your bookery. All uttery words, speed of your pen slowed, must deceive my eyeballed.
I didn't quite catch that, sir.
Ah, Partlow, I'll explain to you. Now, Matthew, my gardener, is deep joy with green fingers in the garbage, you understand.
I see.
Yes. Well, now, we've got this urgent mission for the bishop. And you understand for the bishop of that?
Right.
You do? Right. Well, unfortunately, Matthew is trapped in the engines all rotating most.
Rotating most?
Yes, that's the rotating engine bold. You spell it E-I-N-G-H-E-N-G-Bold. Right. Now, this does... Engie bold. Correct.
Right.
Now, this is a cause and a vibrale in his ear drives. He might crash you for lollipop. We must get there before it's too late. It's a matter of life and death.
A matter of life and death, you say, sir?
Absolutely.
And your destination, sir?
So we should talk about some of the missions that Father Unwin and Matthew go on.
Okay, so as we've said, Father Unwin's got this remarkable miniaturising device, which he keeps hidden in what appears, I guess, to be a large Bible, Brian. And we frequently see his hand take this book down off the shelf in his privacy of his study with Matthew. He opens the book. There is this machine which he presses and points a few buttons, and a sort of miniature satellite dish pops up, points at Matthew, and shrinks him down to about 2 foot tall, which, as we'll come to in a minute, is a convenient height, but we'll come back to that.
Yes, it is. And this shrinking machine is sort of one of the main central ideas of this show, that we end up with the miniature person sneaking around and spying and discovering things. Father Unwin wears an old-style hearing aid that was probably a fairly contemporary one at the time, and this is, in fact, his communication device that he uses to talk to Matthew. So he appears to just be, an older man with a hearing aid. In fact, he's using that to communicate to the other agent. And they head into action, of course, with a distinctive car. This was a 1960s spy-fi show, after all. And in this case, it's a bright yellow 1917 Model T Ford, which has been given the name Gabriel. And it was pointed out at one point that it must have been painted later on, because 1917 was before they were doing the different colors on the Model Ts.
Yes, I don't think you could get the original Model T in yellow.
I think you could a few years later, but not then.
Right. It does have a very impressive paint job, and it is one of the more distinctive cars we've seen in a Gerry Anderson show, or in fact any of the, as you say, spy-fi shows from the 60s. It is remarkable looking.
And of course, like many things in this show, they had two of them. They had a real car that was being driven around, and we would see in live action with someone driving it, and you'd see, you know, a road and what have you, lots of live action pieces. And then they had the miniature model car that was sized for a 2 foot tall puppet. And they would be able to film their puppets in this car as well. So it would appear to be the same car.
So there we are. They've shrunk Matthew down. He's in his suitcase. Father Unwin and suitcase get into this bright yellow Model T Ford and drive off to head to their mission. Usually it's going to then involve Father Unwin bluffing his way through some sort of security guard, or some sort of, getting himself into a house or a base or something, using his kindly priestly appearance and, of course, this weird gobbledygook that he talks in those situations, which is either misunderstood or, as you say, is actually hypnotizing people somehow. And then once they've penetrated their sort of target, there'll usually be a moment when the suitcase will open and Matthew will be sort of deployed, so that he can then infiltrate further and report back to Father Unwin through that weird old-fashioned hearing aid. And maybe he'll have to provide vital information, or maybe he'll have to disable some crucial piece of the bad guy's equipment. But that's sort of how these missions go, Brian.
Yes, sometimes Father Unwin will leave... we'll leave Matthew there and have to come back to collect him later. Sometimes they will do the whole thing with the two of them being involved and on site, and then leave when things have been resolved by the end of the episode.
Okay, so I guess that will bring us to our production notes, which we like to get to at this stage.
Absolutely. This was another production from Century 21 Studios in Slough. You can actually see the studio in the opening shots in the first episode. It was, as we mentioned, Gerry Anderson's last Super Marionation show, although he did come back to a slightly different kind of puppetry years later. But this was really the end of the 1960s run of the puppet shows, and they were leaning towards doing live action with Century 21 and Gerry Anderson's team. You do see far more live action in this than we had seen in any of the other Super Marionation shows. And in fact, Gerry Anderson's team at the time was already working on UFO, and some of them were working on the Doppelganger theatrical movie as well.
Yeah, that's right. So although we've got lots of familiar names in the production team, we're not quite sure that, you know, how much of a role they had, whether it was supervisory or hands-on. I suspect there was a lot of multitasking going on with the Century 21 team at the time. But we do get lots of familiar names that we've come across before. In particular, we've mentioned one already, Gerry Anderson's wife at the time, Sylvia Anderson. And apparently the original idea and the characters were thought up by Sylvia herself. Although it was Gerry Anderson who came up with the title, and he rather liked the title because of its references to sort of church services, but also the Secret Service. This reference to the occupation of the lead character, Father Unwin.
That's right. The show was produced by David Lane with Tony Barwick as script editor. And there were episodes written by the Andersons themselves, by Shane Rimmer, who of course had lots of involvement as an actor and writer with the Anderson team. Tony Barwick, as well as script editing, wrote some episodes, and others were writing as well. And it was done with multiple directors. They had a number of people involved there.
Another familiar name, Derek Meddins, who we know for all the model work and the special effects, and then going on later on to become very successful working on the James Bond movies in the 70s. He supervised the model work here. And of course, as we say, we've got the miniaturized version of the Model T Ford. But we also get other typical, I think, Gerry Anderson type models, a futuristic tank, aircraft, high performance cars and things like that that we'll see in some of the episodes.
Yes, and we had something a little different here because of the combination of live action being used to a much greater extent. So we would have a lot of real backgrounds, and we had camera shots of actors in wide shot where you would then move to a close-up and you would see the puppet of that actor. So they went into much more juxtaposition of live action and real actors with puppetry and model work.
Yes, it is interesting. I mean, we're familiar from previous shows with the hand thing, so that when they needed a hand to do a task, they would sometimes use a shot of a human hand. But much more of that here, as you say, Brian, the wide shots showing actors actually walking, that thing, of course, that the puppets could never do convincingly. And also the idea of shrinking Matthew down, and in fact other characters as well, but mainly Matthew, shrinking him down to the actual size of one of these Super Marionation puppets, meant they could have the puppet interact with real sets. So if they had Matthew sort of investigating an office, he could be in an actual, real office, and they didn't have to build a model set. They just had the puppet on a sort of normal sized human set. So that was an advantage, I guess.
And in fact, they could have a human actor in shot with the Matthew puppet. So they didn't use that too extensively, but you would see a long shot of Matthew standing next to a person's leg or something. At one point, one of the villains was shrunk down and you'd see the human characters next to the miniaturized villain, and those sorts of things were involved with it as well.
We also had the music composed, as ever, by a longtime Anderson collaborator, Barry Gray. Although I have to say, it's the least Barry Gray sounding theme music, or at least the least recognizable to me, Brian.
Well, this is interesting because Barry Gray was working on this music, and what he wanted was something very particular. He wanted the Swingle Singers. The Swingle Singers were a 1960s singing group founded by Ward Swingle, and what they were known for was taking instrumental classical music and singing the notes, singing the parts, but instead of doing it in the traditional classical rhythms, they would move it into a jazz swing rhythm with vocals instead of instruments doing the parts. And they would also do more jazz types of music that would usually be instrumental and doing them with vocals again instead. It was a very particular thing and it was very popular. And in fact, they went to the Swingle Singers and looked to get them involved, to have them record this theme by Barry Gray. And they were simply too expensive. So Barry Gray turned to the Mike Sames Singers, who had earlier sung the supercar theme from the quite early Gerry Anderson puppet show. And Barry Gray directed the Mike Sames Singers and basically had them do an impersonation of the style of the Swingle Singers.
Ah, okay. Right. Some interesting background about choral music, I suppose, Brian. You're one of your specialist subjects.
Well, I suppose so, yes. But it really does sound like the Swingle Singers style. That was something I noticed immediately as soon as I heard it. As had been the case for a number of years with the Gerry Anderson shows, they were very much intending to sell it to American TV. And they decided to play with the accents. I think they exaggerated the British accents to make it easier to understand, they felt, something like that.
Yes, that's what Gerry Anderson says on one of the commentary tracks, that they thought exaggerated posh British accents would be easier for Americans to understand. However, they ran into a big problem, because once they showed the first episode to Lou Grade, of course, the head of ITC, who sort of commissioned these shows from Anderson, Lou Grade couldn't understand Father Unwin at all, particularly when he lapsed into his gobbledygook. And he said, no, the Americans will never understand this show. And he pulled the plug. So they only made 13 episodes. And rather bizarrely, from what we gather, they were only broadcast in three of the ITV transmitter regions. They were Granada, Southern, and the ATV Midlands transmitter. So it didn't go out nationwide, and that's perhaps why it's not the show that people tend to remember from the 60s when they think of Gerry Anderson's Super Mario Nation.
I have not heard of original ITV shows only being broadcast in some of the regions. Is that something that that happened typically with some shows?
No, it's pretty unusual, I think. I mean, we know occasionally that one region wouldn't take a show because of they didn't like it or there was some political reason why not. But this one's quite unusual. I'm not quite sure why it was just those three transmitters. And if you know more about that, perhaps you'd send us us an email or come in on the Facebook group and let us know.
I think that's a relatively small chunk of the country. There were quite a few regions in the ITV system, right?
Absolutely, yes.
So on those three regions, it was first broadcast in September through December of 1969, and it had very few repeats. It did get its broadcast, but was mostly ignored after that until decades later when it finally got a DVD release.
And that brings us neatly to the availability of this show, because in Region 2, we got a DVD release in 2005. All 13 episodes, not too much in the way of extras. There's some stills on there. There's some PDFs of the scripts. You can see a revised title sequence, which has, without the actual, I think, titles imposed on them. Plus, you've got an episode guidebook, which doesn't really tell you much more than is already on the discs themselves. Anyway, that came out in 2005. Currently on Amazon, going for just under £9. So not too expensive over here in Region 2, but not on any of the rental sites, I think. Over in Region 1, Brian?
In Region 1, there is a DVD release. It actually came out a couple of years earlier, in 2003. It's a bit of a specialty product here, so it's a little more expensive, about $48 on Amazon.com. And oddly, it's about $90 on Amazon.ca for some reason. But it is available on a Region 1 release, and it is the complete series. And it appears that it really isn't available on any of the North American rental sites or the UK rental sites.
And at the time of recording, it's not available on YouTube. There were some episodes up. They've been taken down for understandable copyright reasons. And as ever, we would, you know, prefer to watch these things on DVD. And so we do have a DVD release that we've been looking at.
Yes, absolutely. It is a nice, you know, well set up DVD package.
Okay, so next time we're going to talk about some of the individual episodes and get to our favourites.
And we will also talk about the show's unique charms and why it sometimes doesn't work very well. And, you know, a little bit about how this is so unusual with its mix of puppetry and live action.
Okay, plus our reviews and recommendations, some feedback from our listeners on the Facebook group. And as ever, if you want to join us, you can send us your own thoughts about this show and other British Invaders shows.
Absolutely. You can reach us at BritishInvaders@gmail.com, and you can find us at BritishInvaders.com. We are part of the Geek Culture Network, so you can find us at thegeekculturenetwork.com. And if you search for British Invaders on Facebook, you will find our Facebook group with some good discussions going on there.
We are also proud members of the Voice of Geek streaming internet radio at vognetwork.com. Lots of geeky shows there for you to enjoy. British Invaders, one of them, that we go out on Mondays and Tuesdays. And welcome aboard to all those Vog Network people.
Yes, absolutely. They have a nice community built up around Vog, for sure. So thank you for listening, and this is Brian from Canada, signing off.
Yep, thanks very much. Until next time, it's Eamon in England also, signing off.